Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Hello, Steven.
Hello.
Oh, my. Hold on. I must adjust my volume. There we go.
To do the adjustments, adjust the volume. Yeah. Do it and adjust away.
I was blaring my speakers last night playing some Vermintide 2, so.
If you were not on my side, I would kill you where you stand, witch.
Exactly.
That's the classic Inquisitor line.
You look pretty good since you got back from Drakenfels.
Come on, Dwarry.
Yeah, oh, I love good. Their... Another Mayfly city.
I love Bants. Their banter. Their banter is great.
The Bants.
Yeah, the Bants. Yeah, it's excellent. It's very good. I'm a fan.
I'm very surprised. I thought out of all of the Warhammer video games I would get free from White Dwarf that that was not the game I was expecting to play the most of, but I would
it is. It's the most fun.
Vermintide 2 is probably the most fun.
The reason being is it's in addition to being, you know, entertaining, the gameplay loop is good. It's the most pick up and play. Like I was, cause when I like, I mean, I love Total War. Obviously we've talked about the difficulty of that game before, but one of the additional challenges that Total War has that Vermintide, in my opinion, does not have it really at all is if you step away from your Total War campaign for like, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, and you come back to it, you're going to be like, what the fuck was I doing?
What's going on? Why am I surrounded by dwarves?
Yeah, did I have a plan? I don't know. Is that Teclis? Ah, shit. So with Vermintide, like if you took a big break, you can just like hop on with your character and just like hop on some of the lower difficulty missions and like two missions and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, we're back in the groove. We're back in the groove. Yeah, I mean it's really like the hard stuff in Vermintide the stuff that makes Vermintide hard is teamwork at higher level difficulties. That's all it is. It's not the game. The game is not as like the game is punishing, and the higher level difficulties of Vermintide are fucking hard as shit. Like they're very hard. Like they are hard. But one of the things that makes it extra difficult at the higher difficulties is because you need teamwork. Like you can't, because like on the lower level difficulties you can kind of fuck around and like run around by yourself, or like, you know, if one person's with you, you're okay. But like on the higher level difficulties, like everyone needs to be like coordinated. Like you have to actually like request people do specific things, like it, like legitimately, like if there's like a storm vermin or whatever, you have to be like, you know, like elf fucking headshot the storm vermin because you're playing Krauser or whatever and you're tanking, so like you don't have the on the higher level difficulties, like every character can kill shit in that game, but on the higher level difficulties, like the distinctions of like who's good at what really matters. So like the mage being super good at crowd control like super matters on higher level difficulties, and the Empire's swordsman being a tank super matters on higher level difficulties.
This is also the reason why I don't play higher level difficulties, because I don't care about any of that stuff. Like if someone said,
it also requires humans, like you can't do it with bots.
Yeah, like if someone was like, hey, you're playing the swordsman guy, you need to tank this, I'll be like, fuck you, I'm gonna stab things.
But that's the big thing too, is like it changes, like because that game is totally playable with bots up to like a certain level of difficulty where just they're fine, but actually in a lot of cases they're better than most randoms because the bots follow you.
Yeah,
so they're actually in a lot of cases better than random humans, because I can't tell you how many games I played where we'd log on and it'd be me and Joe and two bots, and then a player would log on, and then be the three of us and a bot, and be like, "Yeah, we'd be doing good." And then the fourth slot would be a random elf with a name like Weed Sniper 77, and the elf would immediately just run off by themselves, just like gone. Like, yeah. Where'd the elf go? I don't know. The three of us are still hanging out together. Yeah, but where's the elf? Oh, the elf's dying. And then like the elf just dies. And then it's like, oh, cool. And then I'm sure this person's gonna bitch at us because he ran off like somewhere.
Yeah, well, and that's always the pain in the ass too, is that they do, like, those people do run off, and it's like, you can't run off by yourself in this game because they purposely put in unbeatable traps that make sure that you do not run off by yourself. Like, right, plus you're going to get caught by a man trapper or assassin, and you will die.
Yeah, if a man catcher or an assassin touches you and you're by yourself, you're dead. You can't escape it until your hit points go to zero. You're dead.
Yeah. And it's like, and you're like, well, actually, if you kind of like stay in smaller areas and explore a little bit to see if you could find, you know, like grimoires and dice and everything else, like, it, you get more rewards, but people don't care. They're just like, I'm going to run through as fast as possible.
Well, that's how you can tell if someone's played a lot or not, because the people who played a lot, they'll be like hopping around weirdly. And you're like, why is this person hopping around? And they like break a barrel that like was really hard to get to, and then they pick up a grimoire, and you're like, oh, I see. I see. You've played this game before.
Yeah, I mean, people are dumb. So anyway, hey guys, welcome to Game Classy. I don't do introductions enough on this podcast. I think I do an introduction once out of every three podcasts that we do.
Game Assy.
Which also predicates the fact that people who are listening to this have never listened to it before. And they're like, what am I listening to?
There's absolutely no way that we've got our solid foundation of like 10 dudes who are sweet. And that's it. No one else is coming.
No one else is coming to this party.
Yeah, no one else is coming to the party.
Yeah. So we got a lot of gaming stuff to talk about.
Oh, and two ladies. I'm fairly certain we have two ladies who listen. So we got 10 dudes and two ladies.
Yeah. I just say that we got like 12 people because I don't want to assume anyone's gender.
Fair. I think at one point I was obsessed enough that I was actually like quasi Facebook stalking our likes for a little bit. So I feel that I'm correct.
Well, I think a lot of our Facebook likes are because of shitposting as opposed to the actual podcast itself.
Yes. Well, I mean, hey, I'll take it.
Yeah. Either way.
Although I don't know if I'd say disappointed isn't right, but man, the amount of Prince Philip memes in like Fallout New Vegas subreddit versus like the zero I've seen in Grimdank, really disappointed in the Grimdank shit posters.
I just don't understand how anybody, regardless of, unless they are like super rich, which then they're not listening to our podcast, mind you, how anybody could support anything about the royal family. They are such fuckwits.
Hey, you know what I support? I support Prince Philip memes.
I support Prince Philip memes as well.
What's the matter, smooth skin? Never seen a ghoul before.
I saw someone saying, like, give the man a day. He's, you know, a person just died. I'm like, the royal family are not people. They are lizards.
The absolute best is a screen grab of a Reddit thread that is like, it was like world news or something, and it was just like, Prince Philip, age 99, has died, blah blah blah, Duke of Edinburgh or whatever, and then under that in like a big bold like asterisk is, note, we do not allow celebrations of deaths no matter who it is. And then like, shit you not, like, but like you could have done the Mr. Blue Sky meme where it's just deleted post. And like the best part is all the deleted posts are like close to or already have broken 100 karma by the time they're deleted. So it's great. I'm thinking Mr. Blue Sky in my head. I'm like, yes. Avenue in the crowd inside. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, these I fully celebrate the death of a man who was 99 years old, got the best health care that you could possibly afford on the people's dime. And what did he do? Oh, he had a couple charities that he worked with. Fuck you.
I mean, he also was just like born into that position, right? Like, yeah, like he's nobility. Like, I don't know. It's kind of fucked up that like nobility still exists, like in general.
Well, yes, exactly. It's kind of fucked up that billionaires exist, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, well, that's super fucked up. And like they're essentially like they're quasi nobility, but like I'd say that there is a distinction, but it's not too distinct.
No, it's not at all. It's not at all too distinct. No, I have my issues with that. I think it goes back to like what it was like 10 when I first started dating my wife.
It was
my wife. Whoa. That's an old meme. No,
we're crumbling into dust as we speak.
I was what was it called? I was talking with her family, and it was just seven, eight years after Princess Diana had died. They were talking about something or other, and I went,
Princess Diana was assassinated.
well, no, they were talking about how sad it was, and and I was like, it's not sad, and they're like, well, she had two young kids and blah blah blah, and I was like, my aunt died and she had two young kids, and she worked really hard for it, and yeah, she actually died of cancer. Princess Diana, she was super rich, and she did, and then they were like, but she did all this charity work, and I'm like, yeah, because she was rich and she didn't have to work a real job.
Right. Yeah, you can do charity work when you have infinite money and you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, and it's just because someone who's super rich.
You can get accolades for doing the bare minimum.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to get to. I go, you can, and people like all over the world find it sad because you did the bare minimum you could with that. You know what would have helped out the world a whole lot more? If they had taken all of that money that went to the nobility and had redistributed it to the poor. How about that? That would have done a lot more.
That would be good.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, let's move on. From your royal rant. My royal rant. DMX Joe's also
royal
died.
Rant podcast. Yeah. Yes, that's true. DMX also did die, which means that now you can freely listen to X Gonna Give It to You, and you do not have to worry about money going to him if you had an issue with some of his previous statements, which were, I should say, sketch. But I mean, 50-year-old gangster rapper, like, come on.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love 50 Cent's rap. I don't like 50 Cent. So, not 50. What am I saying? I like DMX's rap. I do not like DMX. So,
yes.
Even that movie he did with Steven Seagal. That movie was terrible.
Can you do a movie with Steven Seagal?
I think it was Steven Seagal.
I mean, the only movie I can think of, like, I immediately, when I think of Steven Seagal plus rapper. Black Dude, I think of Glimmerman. Yeah. No, Black Dude, because I can't remember who it is. I think it was one of the Wayans. Fuck it, I can't remember. I can't remember who's in Glimmerman. I only remember Steven Seagal. Yeah. I'm kind of like, in this movie, I'm kind of black now. And in my next movie, I'm going to be kind of Chinese. That's Steven Seagal, man. He's like, he tries to be like racially nebulous. It's really weird. Like, did I share that video with you? Just the Steven Seagal being weird thing?
Yes, I think you did it. Maybe I'm thinking I'm trying to look up the movie with Steven Seagal. I can't find it, but maybe I'm just thinking of Cradle to Grave, the Jet Li movie.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's the one I might be thinking of.
Exit Wounds. Steven Seagal and DMX are in a film called Exit Wounds. I actually have not seen this movie.
No.
I think this was a little after my Steven Seagal time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's 2001, so it's before Steven Seagal got real bad.
Yeah. Well, I think it's around the last, the last kind of movies that I was watching with Keenan Ivory Wayans was in Glimmerman. I knew it was one of the Wayans brothers. I think the Glimmerman was kind of like at the very end of my watching like all the Steven Seagal movies. So, you know, I loved like Under Siege and Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, of course, Hard to Kill, super good. Basically, like from the 80s to like literally, I think The Glimmerman is like where I liked Steven Seagal movies.
Well, let me just put you this way, DMX also has two credited appearances in two separate Yu-Gi-Oh! Projects. So,
really?
Well, his music. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yu-Gi-Oh! DMX. That's great.
Yes. So there you go. There is a good mix of Yu-Gi-Oh! And DMX.
That is fantastic. I love that.
All right. So maybe before we get to the gaming, do you want to talk Soviet loader?
Russian Gandalf enters.
You know, I want to talk about just the Soviet loader just for a second. In that, you know, if you've been on the Facebook page, you know that Steve and I have been reveling in the release of the Soviet Lord of the Rings project.
I hope everyone really enjoyed that GIF, because that is one of the like most incredible GIFs I've ever seen.
I'm gonna put it out there that just for people who don't know. So in 1991, the Russian Channel 5 decided to produce their own version of Lord of the Rings. And it kind of like no one really knew about it until they just found it in the archives and put it on YouTube, and people lost their minds.
Yes.
But the thing is at least like when last time I looked at it, which was I want to say maybe yesterday morning, they had not put up part 3 yet. And I don't know if there is going to be a part 3, because really they only put up 2 parts, which are about an hour long, and it only really encompasses Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah, because I think the first part ends at Goldberry, so like that's only like not
no,
even
the first
like
part
20.
Ends. Yeah, maybe it was Goldberry.
Yeah, I think it's like Tom Bombadil / Goldberry. So I think that's like what like the first like 10% of the book, maybe.
Yeah, and the thing on top of that too is what was I going to say? It's not even, I tried not to look at anything to like make comparisons. I just tried to watch it raw, and it's almost unwatchable, but it's so unwatchable that it's watchable.
Right. I mean, it would be a lot more watchable if I understood fucking Russian.
Well, exactly. And it's like, and if there was maybe a, what's the word I'm looking for?
A through line,
like if anything was like somewhat comparable.
my favorite is like the costuming is incredible, because like there's like half of them are kind of like, yeah, I guess this kind of looks fantasy, and then there's like also dudes who are just like in clothes.
Yeah,
like they showed up to the studio and it's just like, hey you want to be in Lord of the Rings? All right, grab him.
Okay, so I'm on the site right now, and only the first 2 parts are up. I don't know if there's any more parts. I've been looking at it, and I haven't seen anything. Mm-hmm. The first part has 1.7 million views.
I mean, as it should. It's justified.
And the video that they posted right before then has only 16,000 views. But here's the part I wanted to put out for everybody, and I think this is the interesting part about it, and not a lot of people have like talked about this part. Is that so? This came out in 91, which isn't technically Soviet Lord of the Rings. The Soviet Union had fallen at that point.
Really? 91?
Yeah. The wall came down in 89, Steve.
I thought the Soviet Union still lasted until like 96.
What? No.
All right. Dude, I don't fucking know. I was a kid. I didn't give a shit about the Soviet Union when I was a kid.
I did. I was reading.
All I cared about was Nintendo.
Yeah, because there was, I think, let me see.
Okay, 91 is the final year, so technically yeah. we can say that this is Soviet.
Yeah.
Going by being purely technically correct, which as we all know is the best kind of correct, the Soviet Union's the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics 1922 to 1991. So
yes.
we can freely say
there was also in 1991 there was a period where only Kazakhstan was considered the Soviet Union. So let's
hey again technically correct,
which is the best type of correct.
Dun, 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 dun. I hope everyone enjoyed my vocal rendition of the Soviet anthem, which, in my opinion, is the best national anthem that was ever written, and not just because I'm pro-communist.
Sounds like I'm picking up something on the sonar. What is it? Sounds like singing. Also, by the way, Pat B's obsession with Soviet submarines is one of my favorite new things. But what I wanted to mention is that if you look at the rest of the, okay, so we'll say tail end of the Soviet Union. If you look at the rest of the things that they've put up, they put up videos, like I'm talking like older videos that this channel's put up, because this is Russian Channel 5. And they have stuff from like the 1950s and 1960s, like these gorgeous movies, like gorgeous style. Like these are like,
oh, yeah, you love the old Russian movies.
I do. I like Russian literature and Russian art in general. But I mean,
yeah, like was that Potemkin?
And it's not like these are like piss poor productions. These are like fantastic fucking Eisenstein movies. Not Eisenstein, because he was dead before a lot of these. But like these are like really beautiful productions that they put up. And you're like looking at it and you're like, wow, like these professional Russian ballets and these actors who are not, you know, fantastic, but they're the equivalent of anything that was put out in the United States at the time, if not better.
And well, yeah, I mean, to like the long-standing I don't know, like perception that like the Soviet Union like wasn't functional or good is still one of the things that just kind of like blows my mind that like it's still prevalent, because like you look at the space race, like the space, like space, like you can just go, it's on Wikipedia, it's free, take a look if you don't believe me. The comparison between what the Soviet Union did and what America did and the timelines, actually absurd. The only thing that America did that they got to, like, that made it like quote unquote win the space race, which if you wanted to go like by number of victories, the Russians absolutely fucking dominated the US, but it was the moon landing, which obviously, you know, massive achievement. I'm not gonna discredit that took but to do that when they did that with what they had, absolutely absurd, like unbelievable achievement. I'm not gonna downplay that at all. But if you want to talk like what country did what, how fast, like come, dude, the list of what Russia did is actually insane. However, like it's nuts.
I'm gonna put an asterisk on that, Steve. I'm just gonna put a small asterisk. The right. Soviet Union killed a lot of people that they didn't tell us about getting people into space.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, come on, like every government killed a whole lot of people that they didn't tell us about. Like that's like a standard of existence. Like come on, it's, I mean, like, yeah, like
I want to believe that the United States kind of acknowledged everybody that died in the space program, but they probably didn't. I mean,
no. There was definitely some people who died, probably not like on a not publicized scale. You know that there was absolutely some dude who was strapped to a rocket and they're like, all right, this is our first attempt, if this goes good we're gonna try it again, but we're gonna have cameras this time, and that guy just that guy just melted, and they're like, well, we're not gonna tell anybody about that guy.
All right.
Or it's like in The Simpsons, it's like, should we tell everyone that the chimps we send to space came back hyper intelligent? No, I do not believe we'll be telling them that.
Yes, that's it. And I think that's just like the fun thing to like make that comparison to, is like you see like literally the next video posted after the Lord of the Rings Part 2 is like, I want to say it's Anna Karenina. I'm not 100% sure. I can't read
Cyrillic,
but it kind of looks like Anna Karenina, but I you know, the Cyrillic looks like it.
Yeah, well, Cyrillic's a fucking nightmare. I mean, languages are all really hard, but like, fucking 80, Cyrillic is brutal. Like I think you could reasonably speak Russian. Like I think anyone could probably reasonably speak Russian a lot fucking easier than read write. Like goddamn, it's brutal.
And speaking of that, I finally watched Chernobyl, and I got really mad that no one was actually doing a Russian accent throughout the entire thing.
Really? That's lame.
It's not hard to do a Russian accent. I can do a Russian accent. Just
yeah, everyone can do a Russian accent, you see? It's
you're
really
a little
simple.
More Romanian. I'm just saying, a little more Romanian.
I mean, come on. We can mince words all day about
you're turning into Count Dracula, Steve.
Listen here, human.
One,
I will tell you.
Two, three reactors explosion.
I will tell you how many things we are counting. I could be from easily, you know, farmland part of Russia. I'm from farmland. See, you don't understand.
You might be Georgian. How about that? Well,
yeah, there we go. Yeah, like so there's so many little variants. Yeah. Ooh, Stalin. Now yeah. I can go crazy and send all of my enemies to the Gulag.
The Gulag Archipelago. All right. So let's get into some of the gaming stuff. I wanted to go into the big release for this week, which is Curse City.
Yes, everyone's talking about it. It's the Cursed City.
Yeah. People talking at it. Don't understand a word they're saying. Playing that Cursed City on my mind. I'm walking here.
Just driving around in Age of Sigmar's car.
Yeah. Are these John Voight's teeth marks? I picked up Curse City on Monday. It was actually pretty funny because I'm not going to give away who I pre-ordered from because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But I called them up and I'm like, it's Canna. And they're like, what's up? And I'm like, yeah, I called them on Friday and I was like, yeah, I'm going to totally forget to pre-order Curse City tomorrow. Could you put one aside for me? And he's like, oh, cool. Yeah, that's the last one that I have. You got it. And I'm like, sweet.
That's great.
So it came in on Monday. They let me go in and pick it up and buy it. I will tell you this, Steve, Curse City is more of an experience box set than a game.
Mm.
It is a whole thing. It's a
You were mentioning some strange bits about it.
Yeah, so let me just kind of go with you first off. I'll just take you through a couple things right off the bat. The minis are gorgeous.
As already known.
Yeah. But they are huge. These are way bigger than 32 mils. These got to be at least, we're inching up to the 40s at this point.
Mm, all right.
The standard hero figures are bigger than Primaris figures.
Okay.
Yeah, so these figures are huge.
So it's really a standalone game. It's not meant to be compatible with Age of Sigmar.
It's super compatible with Age of Sigmar. They've released War Scrolls and Point Costs and for all of the heroes and the villains.
But they're giant?
Well, the villains, you get 600... for 600 or 700 points, you get to take all the monsters and villains in one go for Ages.
All right, fair enough. All right, fair. Hey, I stand corrected. Like I said, I didn't bother looking at it at all. So
yeah. But yeah, the figures are huge. So that's a little weird right off the bat. Because I was painting the skeletons, and I'm like, these skeletons are so easy to paint. All the details are written. Oh, wait,
why are they so easy?
Yeah, it's because they're gigantic. Which is nice for my big fat Polish hands.
Yeah. I mean, I would not complain. I like big figures.
I like a bigger figure.
I like when they're big. So there's the Monster Hunter World board game, which is like, I was like, oh, seven figures in a board game, huh? That sounds pretty good.
the component wise, it's got the cardboard terrain that's a lot like standard cardboard, like they've had in the past for Quest. It's really nice. I'm not going to talk too much about
it. Well, I actually do have a question because there's two types of cardboard terrain, and one I absolutely fucking hate, and I hope it's not this one, and then one that I like. Is it squares that are all the same size that you lay out in different configurations, or is it like Silver Tower where like the tiles themselves are weird shapes and they get spread out all sorts of directions?
It's like Silver Tower.
No. Wait. Hang on. Let me redo that. No.
What of Padme? Is she alive?
What of the tiles? Are they squares?
They are. What's the word? Fucking, I can't think of the term for it. But they are definitely square-ish shapes. I can't think of the math term for it.
Rectangle?
Well, some of them are rectangular. Some of them are like.
Is it a rhombus?
It's yeah, like they're, but there's no like weird angles to them. They're all very 90 degree angle. Like, if that makes sense.
Okay, like, got it.
You don't get like a hexagon shaped piece.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
But they're not identical shaped pieces. But
no, they're not identical shaped.
That's my problem with games of that design. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Curse City specifically, but Silver Tower was the problem when I was trying to play some Silver Tower. I liked Silver Tower for the most part. But we were playing on a table that we were all like, this table should be fine. But like the way that the board ended up getting laid out, it was just like, the board doesn't fit on this table.
I can that would be a problem with this game. I could see that happening. You need a big table to play this game.
Because the bard says, no one owns a table. Tables of that size are not owned by mortal men.
You're like, yeah, this might be a floor game for some people. It does, like, and then so, like, that's really cool. And it comes with a lot of, like, your tokens and everything like that. But what I really wanted to get into was the actual campaign system. Now, I don't know too much about the campaign system for Black Fortress. Because I only played Black Fortress like two times. And it's a very fun game, but I didn't know too much about like the story behind it. And like, I know some of the advancement stuff that they had for Black Tower, but this is like a huge, like it reminds me a lot of Risk Legacy or Pandemic Legacy, where there is a very deep story behind the game that you are following along with. And like I was all fine with it until I read like you can lose this game to the actual game. You could lose to the bad guys in the game, like, yeah, and then you have to start the game all over because you've lost. And I was like,
yes, you've died.
And I was like, no, and not just like you died, but like if you take too long to get to the end, you could lose the game. And I was
nice.
Like, oh shit. And all of a sudden I had like a panicky thing, like, I gotta start this right away. We couldn't lose this game. Like, but it wasn't like legit like that, but I did have that moment of like, oh, we have to get on this.
That's great.
So there is a story behind the game in that you have a giant ogre vampire Cossack who took over the city, and you are playing just this ragtag team of heroes who are floating around on a airship, a Caradon airship, who are like occasionally dropping down for missions to resupply, but the airship is slowly failing.
Right, that's cool. Yeah, I like it.
So you have to complete all these missions where you got to kill not only the goons, like the not goons, but the schlubs.
This sounds like a dope ass video game, not gonna lie.
It does. It's very much a dope ass video game. But you gotta like, so you gotta kill your standard skeletons and zombies and rat swarms and all that, so you level up.
Yeah, yeah.
The rules specifically say you can't start playing the story missions until you reach a certain level. So that first story mission, you can't play until everybody's level one and everyone starts off at level zero.
Nice.
And then, like, so you can't play that last mission until everybody is at that last level.
Nice. Right? Okay.
So that's pretty cool in and of itself. So how do you get to that level? You have to play these interstitial missions. And then so the leader of the group decides what kind of mission you're going to go through. Are we going to do, like, a smash and grab? Are we going to do, like, just, like, a normal, like, hunt for treasure type mission? So you have to do those. And then as you're playing those missions, you have certain cards that you lay out. And so, like, let's say one of the missions is a hunt mission. There's four treasure pips that you got to search out. Each treasure pip is guarded by a specific bad guy. The card that you flip out tells you what bad guy shows up according to the level that you are. So, like, let's say you're level three and you need to advance to level four. You have to play one of these interstitial meetings. You lay it out, the card. The card has a chart, and it says if you're level zero, you have these bad guys. One, two, three, you have these bad guys, so on and so forth. So the mission gets more difficult as you progress. So it's very, very flexible in that way.
All right. I like it.
It also comes with a special card that's sealed in an envelope that you have to open up at the end, which gives you a special endgame scenario.
Cool.
Apparently, there are like eight different types of these that go out to all the different boxes.
Oh, cool. So it's just, it's an actual like random surprise. That's neat.
Yeah.
I like it.
Apparently that was in Blackstone Fortress, according to Dwayne. So
Okay, cool.
But even still, I think that's pretty sweet in there.
Yeah. That's definitely cool. That's one of the things I really liked about playing Betrayal Legacy.
Yeah.
Is there's so much that like where it's just like random, like you're like, yeah, it's like grab this, put this in this envelope, shake this up, pull it out and see what happens. And it's like, oh, so we're doing this now. And it's just like, yeah, that scenario is like, I don't know, very rare. Like you have a 10% chance of actually seeing that. Cool.
Yeah. Which I think is really sweet. Let me get into some of my complaints about the game though.
Ready.
Okay.
Are you starting with the vacuum seal?
Vacuum seal? No. What, there was a vacuum seal?
No. You said the push fits like a vacuum seal.
Oh, yes, that's one of them. Yeah, there's so the models are made to a very, very high tolerance. And like, so this is a really weird one for people. Like, this is me complaining about like mechanics and like milling process. So I used plastic glue to put the, and it has, so, you know, it has the peg to hole method. So you put a little plastic glue on the peg so it slides in there. The tolerance is so high that you can't push all of the air out as you're pushing the figures together. So what you're creating is a vacuum that pushes the model apart as you're trying to push it together. So you got to like really hold it tight to like squeeze out that tiny bit of air through that high tolerance. Now you think like, oh, Joe, that sounds silly, but if your model dries and it doesn't have it, it's not pushed all the way together, you have that.
It's going to look weird. Yep. It's going to look weird.
It's going to look weird. So you have to, like, it's something that Games Workshop really needs to like think about when they're doing that. Like, yes, your high tolerance is great.
I'd probably do a little angled cut on the peg.
Yeah.
And then just, cause that'll fix that immediately. If you just just a tiny little angled cut on the peg, it'll fix all the problems.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did. I did that exact same thing and it helped.
Yeah, that's good. You know, luckily, that's something that on plastic models is like a very easy fix. I remember that kind of thing happened on a metal model where you're like the tolerances were just weird in whatever direction. It was always just like, oh my God, this is gonna be a disaster.
Well, a Games Workshop metal model, it's like one piece would you put it on there and you'd be like, this doesn't match at all.
Yes. Yeah. I have to say, like, just waxing nostalgic about things, I do miss and still really like single piece metal models. I really like the same. And that's the thing. I think that's where metal models got the bad rap. And justifiably is like the multi-part metal models were brutal. And like they always have been. And they're the models that are most likely to like, you know, fall apart if you look at them funny. Cause like, oops, like this one joint, like the old executioners where you had to glue the blade onto the fucking hands.
Oh my God.
Insane. But like the single piece, like those are just fine. Or the ones that they have a plastic bit, like a plastic shield. You glue a plastic shield onto a metal model, totally fine. Like A-okay. Like no problems with that. So like that's something I do miss. I think that worked well. I mean, it's obviously something that's more of like a thing that I'm a fan of because I'm a fan of regiment games. It's the same reason I like the old like static pose plastics from fifth edition. Like yeah, I think those look really good in the regiment.
Well, I think metal model, I also like that it's just weird, a hand feel of a metal model. It feels better in your hand when you're painting it.
Yes, well, it's got a weight. Like, I call it
the hand feel.
The hand feel? Yeah. I do find that with that hand feel, I'm less likely to drop models. Like, I found that I dropped plastic models a lot more than I dropped metal ones.
I was just going to, I was having that thought yesterday when I was painting a model and when I was painting plastic models and I was dropping them. I'm like, am I having like early onset neurodegenerative disease? Like dropping models. Like, I'm just like, it's like that scene in a movie where a person drops a model and he's like, and then the next scene they're in the hospital and they're like, well, sir, you have brain death.
Yes. Well, sir, you have Bronson's Jamadamband. What's that? It means you'll never paint a miniature again. No. And then you got Tony Danza and they're like, just give up, Joe. You'll never make it.
Why is Tony Danza playing the Special Stallone part?
Well, that's a very specific gag from fucking Family Guy.
Oh.
So.
Tony Danza.
It was I might even be misremembering it, but I believe the gag was Tony Danza was played by in the movie, it was the Joe Swanson story where like he was in the wheelchair and then like he like started to run and like his legs worked again. That was the gag.
Yeah.
But if I remember correctly, it was Tony Danza played by B. Arthur. and that was it. Just give up, Joe. You'll never make it. It was really weird. And this might be something that my brain just concocted and made up completely.
It sounds like a Family Guy bit. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it seems believable enough. I just remember it's very fun. I just remember being very funny. Also from, you know, the late 90s, so my memory might be shoddy on it.
Hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Hey, Angela.
Light the headlights on the highway.
Oh, it had nothing to do with Tony Danza. B. Arthur was playing Peter Griffin's part because it was a real life reenactment. I don't know where I was thinking of fucking Tony Danza.
I don't know either.
Oh, I know. Tony Danza was playing the part of Joe in the film. In the Major TV movie, Joe Swanson was played by Tony Danza. Damn. I just had like a whole, there's a whole, I had a whole sequence go on there.
So the other thing, some of the other issues that I have, and these aren't huge issues, mind you. These are like very, very minimal. The cards that come in the box, they didn't give you any sort of card storage. So they just like gave you loose cards and said, fuck you. Like, it's like they just threw the cards at you and like, pick it up, swine. You know, you don't get it. We don't care about you. Because Warcry, at least, you got these really nice little plastic and paper card sleeves. They weren't
fancy. Yeah, the little boxes.
What's that?
The little storage boxes.
Yeah, but they weren't really storage boxes. They were more like sleeves. But still.
Yeah.
But at least they were able to hold your cards together. Like, I don't know what they were expecting you to do with Curse City. I mean, granted, they gave you a lot in that box set, but still, like, it wouldn't have cost that much just to throw in a couple card sleeves so that way you could keep all your stuff stored properly. I just kind of feel like it was like kind of just like they just threw the cards at you and were like, pick it up, you fucking idiot. Fucking pig. Pick up the card.
They just assume that you have shit because they're just like, nah, they're nerds. They've got card storage. Who cares?
Yeah, it's like, why don't you crawl on the floor? Take off your shirt, piggy boy. Pick up your shirt and pick up the card, piggy boy.
Why is GW suddenly like a butch dom?
Oh, I got issues.
all right, very good.
Then another thing is that the cards are actually multiple sized cards. Like, they don't give you like just straight one size card deck. Like,
you know what? That is one of my biggest bitch fests about every game. Like, any game that's ever been made. Like, Fantasy Flight was the worst with that, but it's just like
Fantasy Flight. It's very Fantasy Flight.
Yeah, Fantasy Flight was the king of it, but lots of other companies do it. Like, plenty of other companies do it. It's not just Fantasy Flight. I'd say Fantasy Flight was the king because they did it the most and they had the most sizes per game. But like, I don't care if you want smaller cards. I don't care if you want bigger cards. I don't care if you want standard size cards. Whatever you're doing for your game, every card should be the same size.
Period. Exactly. Well, apparently, and I didn't know about this, and so you can, I just never thought about it in this way until recently, that there are different sized playing cards in Europe, right?
Yeah, I know. That's where they have the European size sleeves. I know why the different cards exist.
But I don't know why that still exists after post-war when we defeated the Nazis and communism, that these card sizes still exist, and why they didn't adopt the American system, which is obviously the superior system because we defeated the Nazis and the commies.
Look, when technically the commies helped us defeat the Nazis in World War II, Joe.
But then we defeated the commies, so therefore we're better. We defeated both Nazis and commies.
Well, let's take it back for just one quick second. It's probably the same reason that pink is still considered the girl color, because that was the boy color until Hitler was like, no, it's for the gays.
Probably. Could very well.
No,
be.
It's actually true.
Hitler, Steve?
You can follow that little story. It's an actual historical anecdote. The pink blue swap was literally because of the Nazis. So that's probably why the multiple cards still exist, Joe, because it's tradition.
Tradition.
Yes.
Day and night must scramble for a living, feed his wife and children, say his daily prayers, and who has the right of master of the house to have the final word at home? The papa. Here you go, Steve.
Is that Yentl?
Tradition. No, it's Fiddler, man.
Fiddler. Yes.
No, you want me? Is this the little girl I care?
Oh, you can't prompt me. I don't know any of the songs from this one.
You don't
my
know bad. Any songs from Fiddler?
I do not. My musical experience is broadly limited. I do not generally enjoy musicals. But my favorite scene in any musical is from Sweeney Todd, and it's Sacha Baron Cohen when he's like, "You may say it was a cardinal." Nope. It was about poop. Like that cracked me up. Like, I enjoyed that little the great Perenni like barber scene. But generally, I'm not a musical guy. I don't.
It's a very manly tradition, Steve. It's a very manly tradition, the American.
I don't think there's anything particularly like feminine or masculine about musicals. It's not really my thing. Like, I mean, musicals seem to be just be like, they're like not, they're just like a genre. Cause like, obviously, you know, fucking Bye Bye Birdie is significantly different than say, I don't know, Les Miserables. So like it's you know, that's like saying like movies are for men. It's like, well, no, it's like some movies I would say are more masculine than others. Like
no. Fucking... The musical, the American musical is a very masculine tradition, is what I'm saying.
Well, so you're saying that you only watch West Side Story and you do not watch Cats. We're gonna rumble with those greasy sharks.
When you're a jet from your first cigarette.
Also getting strange feelings from Rum Tum Tugger's package in fucking Cats.
So what we're saying here is release the butthole edition. That's what we're saying.
Oh, the butthole edition of Cats? Yes. No. See, that's the thing. So this is an interesting note about Cats. They managed to make a version of Cats that was not appealing to anyone. No one, as a young lad, I had absolute, like, definite, like, inclinations when watching the original musical, like, for sure. But like seeing the new movie where they're like things, like, that's the only way you can describe them. They're like a thing because they hit the uncanny valley like perfectly, like where you absolutely do not want to be in the uncanny valley. They fucking planted their flag and were like, this is where we are. So like they're like even though like, yeah, like no one liked it, like regular people thought they were very off-putting and creepy, furries thought they were very off-putting and creepy, just standard degenerates such as myself thought they were off-putting and creepy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, when the furries think it's off-putting and creepy, that's when you're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, like the one, like in theory the one group you've made it for to appeal to the most, and they're like, no, you know, come on. It's like there you go, there's your answer. Like, in theory the group that it'll appeal to the most hates it, probably gonna be a problem. And the best part is like, they just thought that that movie was gonna be so good. They were like, oh, this is gonna be so amazing.
Yeah.
So and all that said, I do want to see Gandalf Cat's butthole. So
yeah, so that all said and done, we just want to see the butthole edition.
Yes.
So back to Curse City. Those are my only real complaints about it. I don't really think it's too bad of a game, and I don't think it's anything in it is too bad. I think it's, oh, and the price is a little on the pricey side. It was $200 for the box.
So here's the question.
Yeah.
We should have a new rating system. I literally just thought of
after
this.
After 230 podcasts, we're going to have a new rating system.
We technically don't have a rating system now, but I think that there's a rating system that I just thought of. All right, here it is. It's called the HeroQuest scale.
Okay.
So the HeroQuest scale is a simple binary, yes or no. And this is how it's going to work. I go HeroQuest, and then if you say no, that means that you would not buy HeroQuest instead of this game. If I say yes, you would buy HeroQuest instead of this game. So for example, I would say Descent, HeroQuest, and you'd say yes. You'd obviously buy HeroQuest over Descent.
Okay.
So I think that what say you to my proposition?
I would buy this game over HeroQuest.
Okay. So this is a no. This is a no on the HeroQuest scale.
Yeah. It's a very, right, very good game. And I think it's very much it's a very smart culmination of a lot of things Games Workshop has been doing to kind of produce very accessible story-based games, and kind of it hits every part of that. Every part of the brain for the hobby, so it hits that, like, it hits all, like, the painting, the assembly, the fiddly bits, the longevity of the game, the story, it all kind of works together in a way that I haven't seen done in a very long time. But yeah, as I say, the $200 price tag is a little pricey. I know that they said, oh, that was my other, here's another problem complaint with it. Is they say there's 60 fucking figures in this box set. There's not 60 figures in the box set. There's about 40 figures in the box set.
Also, $200 for 60 figures is steep as fuck.
Yeah. Well, and well, you
even on GW standards, yeah. that's very steep.
Well, and but there's also on top of it, it's not just like the figures. There's like there's a lot in the box set, so you got to take all of that into comparison. But the like when they say 60 figures, it's more like there's 40 figures and there's 20 like little figures like forms and bats and shit like that. And like to call that, that's very disingenuous, Games Workshop, to call those figures. You know, like there's one of their figures, and I'm putting that in quotation marks. I know no one on the podcast can hear it, is a gravestone. So
That's sketch. That's sketch.
I know exactly. That's very sketch.
Yeah, that's sketch. And I'm gonna go ahead and say that's fucking sketch. I do not like that. Do not count accessories as miniatures in your game.
Exactly.
If you want to count it as components, so if you want to say like 40 models and 20 components, sure. But give me a distinction. Don't tell me a fucking tombstone is a fucking trooper.
Now here's a question for you though, Steve. Does a rat swarm count as a figure?
A rat swarm counts as one figure. Yes.
I see. I don't think that. I think that that's. I think that's more of like a like a.
I would need to. I guess. In this particular instance, I would need to see the rat swarm because, like, for example, the old rat swarms for Skaven, absolutely, those were figures. Like, there was like a bunch of rats on a base. Like, there's a lot of models there. There's a lot of things. So I'd probably
consider these rat swarms in this game to be a figure. However, they do give you like a little like an undead zombie cat, which is so small and it's by itself, and I'm like, this is not a figure. This is just
that's not a figure. That's an accessory. Yes, that's the thing too. Like, it's important to note that like a swarm is one figure. Like, I don't care if the swarm is actually like a Nurgling swarm is a great. The old Nurgling swarm is a good example where it was actually like six little Nurgling models.
Yeah,
that's one figure. So that's an important thing when you're talking swarms count as one. I don't care if there's a bunch of actual little models in there, like even the newer Nurgling swarms that are like a big pile of Nurglings, that's one figure.
Yeah. Swarm. So the but I went there was some drama with it this week because the pre-orders online sold out right away. And
yeah, you said before the pre-order email went out.
Yeah, before the pre-order email even went out, as soon as it opened up, they sold out immediately. Which was because a lot of people were speculating, and I'm saying this is I'm granted there's no like official documentation on this, but a lot of people were speculating that it was going to be a limited release like Indominus, which is it's not going to be that. This and Games Workshop has said multiple times, we are going to support this game for, you know, a year, 2 years, something like that. You know, they're going to release multiple expansions
just like they did with Blackstone
Fortress.
Yeah,
but then immediately after like it sold out, people went on to the Facebook pages, the forums, and they were like, oh, well, it's going to be a limited release, so I don't know how I'm going to get it. And these people were obviously fucking resellers who have their shit up on eBay.
Yeah, they're plants who are trying to sell their bot purchased 20 copies.
Exactly. So they were like, I don't know if it's going to be released. So eventually, thank God, some of the fucking forum admins and Facebook admins started like putting the ban on people even starting those posts.
Nice.
Saying like, no, Games Workshop said this, and like, and you could actually see on eBay, you could chart the price of the Cursed City stuff.
You could watch it plummet as people realize it's not limited,
and then plummet as soon as like they started putting the bans on it. And it's true. I mean, like, and these people are shitty people. Like, I don't mind the people. Here's the thing: I don't mind the people who buy the game and break up the components and just sell like specific things. Cause there are people who don't want to buy a $200 box set. They just want one or two of the figures.
I mean, I used to do that all the time. And I always told people to do that with base games stuff too. Like even Indominus is a great example. Like if you wanted the Space Marines and you didn't have someone to split the box with, buy the Indominus box and sell the Necrons on eBay.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and like,
you might not make exactly half value, but you'll make a bunch of money back on models you don't want to keep.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff was a lot of the stuff that they were, you know, it's like, we'll sell the hero models for $20 to $30, whatever. It's like, that's kind of standard. I can't complain about that too much, but it's like the people who are trying to sell them for like $75 to $100 for a single model.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh please.
Yeah. Like, yeah. People trying to gouge is always just going to be like, get out of here.
Well, because there was myself too. I was like looking at it too. Like when I bought the box set, and then I was like, I don't know. I got this box set. I know they're going to put out with more ones. Should I put it up for sale on eBay?
Well, like, that's the thing too. Like I always tell people, I'm like, I understand that like you don't like gouging, but like, if you don't allow yourself to give in to the FOMO, it takes two people to gouge. Like if you get gouged on something, it's partially your fault.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like if you get gouged, it's partially your fault. I will say, depending on what the item is, there's obviously like there's some distinctions, because like if it is a limited item and you want the limited item and you get gouged, that's, I would say that's not your fault, because it's like you can't, like you have no choice. Like it's something that should be $30, you have to pay $70 because the one you're buying for $70 is the only one you're ever going to see. That is not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about are things like the PlayStation 5 Curse City box set, even Indominus. They did a huge reprint wave on Indominus. Like all of those things that are going to be available again later. If you get gouged on something like that, you have to accept that that's your responsibility for being gouged in that. Like if you're paying $700 for a PlayStation 5, that's your fault, because you can just wait for it to be restocked at $500. Like it's not going to come back.
Well, and that's the thing is like, and like, I think that they were, the people who initially bought them thought that it was going to be like, the people who are scalping them initially thought it was going to be a limited release box mm-hmm. set, but they're obviously not Games Workshop fans and weren't following along with it.
So them getting blown out is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly on that one. But again, once it goes down, and I always like on the post that people were saying, like they would show like stocks that like local gaming stores would have, and they'd like show like they have like 8 to 10 copies of Curse City. They're like, we have plenty of copies here if you want them, you know. And like the guy mm-hmm. would be like, well, I don't know, if I don't want to have to pay like double on eBay. But I think I might have to, because I really want to play this game. Fuck you.
So we know what you're doing.
That was the big drama with it right now. And also, there's another current drama, too. And this goes down to Games Workshop. They have this big release coming out, but they can't mm-hmm. ship out the pre-orders to the individuals who ordered through the website on time because someone at the distribution center got COVID.
Of course.
They had to delay the package being delivered.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way that, like, as someone who deals with logistics all the time, let me tell you, people do not understand the level of like what a quote unquote small thing does. Like people don't realize the exponential difference. Like if my warehouse gets shut down for a day, you have to look at it like this. If a warehouse, like if you don't work in logistics, you understand logistics, and you can't wrap your head around all of these delays and like why things go as crazy as they are, and why something like that, the Evergreen, the hilarious meme, the meme tanker, why that's going to cause just like probably cause delays for 6 to 8 months or longer, is work doesn't go away. As I'm sure everyone knows, if you're employed, you know your work doesn't go away. It stays. But in theory, while you are working, you are still working, so you're chipping away at it. When you are not working, the work remains. And when it's logistics, it's even worse, because logistics starts to bump into each other and pile and pile and pile and pile. And suddenly your warehouse that was shut down for a week has an entire week's worth of work to do. But when they get back to their warehouse, new work also continues to appear. So now they're playing catch up. So they're trying to catch up to the 7 days missed work. And then the day that they're, so they work a day. Okay. They managed to do 2 days worth of work in a day. Great. So that's 5 days delay still. Oh, plus you actually have the day that they didn't get to, which is the new stuff. So now they're at 6 days. And then the next day, oh man, they only managed to do 1 day, which means they're back to a 7 day delay. The next day, the volume is so big, they only did half day. So that means that they actually increased the delay. There's now an 8 day worth of work. So that's why all these delays and all this shit happens. So right now, basically, if you get something and it's on time, fucking A, early, you should basically thank like your lucky stars that the invisible world that you don't have to pay attention to is functioning.
Yeah. Well, we're also kind of lucky in the United States. Not 100%, but we're kind of lucky in that most of our stuff is made in China and they just ship it over the Pacific as opposed to going through the Suez Canal.
Right. Well, yes, that's the thing too. Like, who knows what's delayed there? Because that's like it could be something on that boat, but it also could be a bunch of things. What was delayed on the boats behind it? So yeah, that's when a warehouse shuts down. So say like manufacturing, like if a manufacturing warehouse shuts down because of COVID, well, bam, that's delays there, and then that's going to create it cascades. Like that's why stuff is getting harder to get, or like randomly, like you can just look at all of the card game stuff that's being delayed like crazy. There's the My Hero Academia card game from Jasco was hotly anticipated. That game just got hit with like a 6-month delay, like. Magic the Gathering, the biggest card game, their basic booster boxes are going to be delayed for the next set. Shit's getting delayed. Like, don't plan, don't think these things that you took for granted of like always having it on time on the release day is going to keep going, because sometimes it's just not going to work out. Everyone's trying their best, but shit, man, if it shows up on time, be happy.
Yeah. That's the big drama going on with Curse City. I'm very much looking forward to playing it. I kind of want to get more.
You're gonna play it with yourself?
Yeah. I actually have a virtual setup so I can play with some people via the web.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. I'm very much looking forward to it. I think it looks super cool. I want to get a little more of it painted before I get it out there, and I want it to look nice. Here's another thing that's fucking been annoying me lately, and I talked with you a little bit about this yesterday. People with the fucking gloves on when they take pictures.
Here's
the thing, guys. If you're listening to this podcast and you paint figures and you put up a picture on Facebook, on Instagram, if you're putting it up on dig.com, I don't care what you're putting it up on. Number one, do not post a fucking picture of a mini until it is done being painted. Okay. I don't want to see your work in progress. You want to know why I don't want to see your work in progress? Because I got a shit ton of work in progress shit on my desk right now. And I don't need to see your work in progress shit put up on the internet. Like, look at how well I blended this color blue. No, fuck you. Who cares about blending? How about that? Okay. Number one. Number two, wearing latex gloves while you're painting is fucking so bougie. It's bullshit. Look, if you look at my Instagram post, and Steve will confirm this. Steve gives me shit about my painting all the time, but he will admit one thing, that my volume of getting shit done and at tabletop quality minimal is insane. Is that?
Yeah, you turn it out.
Yeah,
you turn out completed miniatures.
Yes, and you can look at those minis, and you know how many fingerprints you could see on those minis? Virtually none. Yeah, there was one that I put up just recently that did have a fingerprint on it, and I know that's a different story.
My big thing for the gloves is the only time I've ever used latex gloves painting ever is when I was doing a dip with Army Painter Dip. This is the only time I ever used latex gloves. And you know what? If you're taking pictures of you doing your Army Painter Dip with your fingers and you're throwing latex gloves on, all right, I'd be fine with that.
That's another thing. I don't want to see you dip figures. I just want to.
I don't want to see in progress painting anyway. But
like, I just want to see I just want to see your finished figure, because you know what? I'm happy with your finished figure. I don't care about your.
Show me the end result.
Yeah. And it goes to another part too, which is I don't care about your techniques or anything about that. So many people on the internet right now are obsessed with these techniques of wet blending, non-metallic metal, which we've been bitching about for the last 13 years of this damn podcast.
Yes.
Or however long we've been doing it, 10 years at this point. About non-metallic metals, about object source lighting, about pin washes, which is the new fucking thing.
What the fuck is a pin wash?
That's when you work with oils.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I already hate that.
Yeah. It's when you're working with oils, and it's like, okay, I go back to this bit of trivia about the 1970s movie Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman. That's the one with, is it secret? Is it safe?
That's Lord of the Rings.
No, there's another movie where it's like that.
Oh, nice. All right.
What was I gonna, you derailed me. Oh yeah, Dustin Hoffman. There's a story that goes in which Dustin Hoffman was staying up all night in order to stay in character, because he's a method actor, in order to stay in character for the movie. So he comes in the next day and he's fucking exhausted. He goes up to Laurence Olivier, and Laurence Olivier is like, you know, why the hell are you so tired? And Dustin Hoffman's trying to explain all this stuff about staying in character and staying in the method thing. And Laurence Olivier looks at him and says, why don't you just try acting? It's
getting fucking owned by Laurence Olivier. That's great.
Yeah. And so, like, and that's the same thing. Is like, when you're fucking showing me like pin washes and like your progress photos of pin washes that you're doing over the course of like 6 days because of so-and-so and so-and-so, or your object source lighting or your non-metallic metal, you finished one fucking figure. You know how many figures I fucking finished? I finished the entire box of Curse City in the time it took you to paint one non-metallic leg. You know why?
Yeah, but they're painting. They're making fancy pants Instagram posts for likes.
Yeah, and you know what? I get just as many likes as most of those people. And I told you this. Like, I respect maybe 6 painters in the entire world. And that's not saying that I don't like people's paint jobs, but I respect 6 people. Like, I'll see other person's paint job, and I'll look at it and I'll go, "Oh, that's fucking great." And I can mean that. That can mean I will legitimately mean, "Oh, I love your fucking paint job." You know, and like, I would like to see more of your painted stuff, but I don't really care about your painting techniques. I don't care about anything involved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a procedural boner that kind of like exists in the background radiation of tabletop gaming in general. And I think it's super obvious with painting. Obviously, because painting is in itself a procedure, but I think there's the same thing for like DMing. Like people they want the procedure, they want behind the curtain. Like, how do I DM? Like, what do I do? Like, what's the steps? What's the process? What's the, you know, what's the fucking magic? Like, that's, and I think that's like something that's permeating a lot of tabletop in general. Like, people, like, because people are super into all those actual play podcasts, which I think are atrocious, just horrible. But like, it's because they want to see, like, they want to be like, oh, I want to use that for my game. And I'm like, then use someone else's idea for your game. Use your idea for your game. Exactly. People want to play in your game because they want to play with you. They don't want to play with you trying to emulate fucking Matt Mercer. They don't want to play with your impression of some podcast that you listen to. Like, no, they're there to play with you, dummy. Like, and also, do your own thing.
And also, Matt Mercer only does what he does in that game because he's entertaining a lot of people through Twitch and YouTube. Like, he does that because he has an audience. Like,
right. You don't have an audience.
Yeah, Your players don't give a shit.
Critical Role and things like that are designed to be consumed as a pop culture piece of media. They're not. Like, if I tried to play in a campaign where someone was running it like Critical Role style, I would fucking leave. Like, our role play every single shopkeep. Like, there's just, I was talking to Angel Baker about this, which is like, role play every shopkeep? Fuck no, that's terrible. I will not role play a single shopkeep unless they're a relevant character, because a shopkeep in a fantasy role playing game exists only to fund a transaction. Like, he's the guy you're gonna grab your fucking, you know, I give you a piece of paper, say this stuff costs this much, you mark it off on your character sheet. Now, if you have to negotiate with the shopkeeper for the lost amulet of Amon Sul that he happens to have, sure, that's something that I definitely want to role play. I want to role play that shopkeeper. What's his story? You know, what's going on with this? How did he get the lost amulet of Amon Sul? Sure, that's fine.
The shopkeep is a guy who legitimately is going to end up being a bad guy later, who's selling you a cursed object now so that it could pay off later on.
Or not even coming back again, but just like an important story point. Like, if he's a story point, like, that's the only time you should have a character that, if a character is talking in your game, there should be some relevance. That, like, throwaway roleplay is like, that's for podcasts, that's for Twitch, that's for, because that's what people want to see. They want to see these professional actors, voice actors, and goofsters, like, messing around.
A bunch of goofsters.
Like, that's what they want to see. That's why these podcasts and stuff are popular. And I get it, but it's not fun to play. No. It's fun to watch. I mean, arguably fun to watch, but the whole reason people watch it is because of those, that setup. And that's not what you want to do when you're playing. And that's the thing too. Like we were talking about this, like in general, like how D&D is the most popular board game in the world. Cause it's a board game. And like I was slamming third edition and forward, where like third edition was really where it started to become a board game and not be a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Because they figured out they could sell more books and plastic toys if they made people actually have to use a map with a grid on it. I'm like, sure, plenty of people used gridded maps in AD&D. No question did that happen. But people, like, you know, they had random models or chess pieces or whatever. Like, sure, that was a thing. That's always been a thing.
Well,
no,
yeah,
question.
The vast majority of the people my feeling is the vast majority of people who do role playing do not use combat grid maps.
You actually incorrect.
No, you think
the vast majority of people have a huge hard on for the rules of the game, like huge hard on. Here's the distinction. The vast majority of people who want to play don't want to use models, don't care about the rules. They just want to have a good time with their friends.
Yeah.
The vast majority of people who actively play are like, what do you mean we're not using models? I designed my warlock to use all of these rules and 5-foot steps and this and then my character design is completely thwarted because you're not using the battle map. That's the majority of people who play Dungeons and Dragons.
And also, the vast majority of people like you and I absolutely cannot stand.
Yeah, that's not like this thing. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. I personally would never do that in a role-playing game because there are games that offer that experience in a much more streamlined capacity. Like, I don't know, fucking HeroQuest. Like, they want to play HeroQuest. They want to play HeroQuest with custom characters because that's what they want.
They want to play Cursed City.
They want to play Cursed City, yeah. They want firm, concrete rules. They want to move their toy on the board. Like, that's the thing. Firm, concrete. You good? You all right? that's what they want. They want specific rules. They want, you know, they want to move their toy on the board. And a lot of them want to, like, if they admit it, if they say, like, that's what I want to do, I'm all for that. I'm like, you know what? That's fine. If you, for some reason, want to play tactical combat using a system as back-ass words as D&D for it, okay, sure. I think it's a stupid idea, but okay. So many of those guys, I call it the role-playing power game, the role-playing power gaming cloak. And what the role-playing power gaming cloak is they're the guys, and like, if you've ever run a game with people who you may or, like, I think this is not something that you would encounter a lot if you're playing with friends, but definitely if you're playing with strangers or people you don't know, you've probably encountered this player. And what they are is they're someone who's very good at narration. Like, they're very good at the theater of the mind descriptions. So, and like, they're into like the story in the background. However, their 6-page document on their character's background is all just a behind the curtain because they want to be undead, because then they don't have to take saving throws against poison. Like, that's what it is, because it's, because yeah, because you're like, all right, everyone take a saving throw versus this poison gas, and they'll be like, in my background I wrote that I have this, and it's like, oh, so you tried to use your background to get rules to power game. I see. So they're the artisan, they're the artisanal water of power gamers.
The artisanal power gamer.
The artisanal power gamer. Yes, they're the artisanal power gamer. That's what they do, because they try to wrap their power gaming in like a bunch of fluff, those guys really put me on tilt. I'm like, oh,
I love
so mad.
I love all sorts of artisanal foods. However, I don't know about you, but I tend to find everything artisanal ends up smelling kind of like feet.
Yeah, it's because they step on it.
Yeah, that's I guess that's true.
That's what makes it artisanal. It's the artisanal feet.
It's artisanal feet. I did want to point out though that in Cursed City, this was something cool that I did come with. I didn't come across, but it's in the rule book that there are crises that your party will come across, and it gives you if-then statements. So I'm just going to do the first one. A victim of the times, if this comes up, a sympathizer of Radukar's crushing rule lies bleeding in a gutter. They claim to have forced They claim to have been forced to serve the wolf against their will. The acting hero must choose to bind their wounds or let them die. Steve, do you choose to bind their wounds or to let them die?
I let them die and steal their shit.
Okay, you let them die. And then it actually tells you, turn to entry 124 on page 40. And so if you go to page 40, rule 124 is, it says, the hero ignores the pleas of the sufferer, the sympathizer. Such scum have earned their just reward. The acting hero gains one inspiration point and the crisis ends.
Nice.
So there's a lot, and there's a lot.
Hell yeah.
There's a lot of these. So you have a ton of if-then statements that you have to come across in the game, which gives it a very role-play feel. And this is what I was telling, and this is what you were saying, like, when it comes down to, I have my stats on my card. This is what I'm going to play for combat. I only really care about the combat action, and the role playing is minimal. This is the type of game for you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. They want to play a board game, and D&D is the 40K of tabletop games that aren't specifically war games, because people play 40K. Maybe they don't necessarily like 40K the most, but if you want to play with people. If you have a 40K army, you're going to play 40K. Age of Sigmar is close. Age of Sigmar is very, very close.
I'm going to say right now, in the Chicagoland community, I see 40K going down. I'm not seeing I still see 40K players, but I see there's a whole hell of a lot. Whenever I go to a gaming store now, I mean, granted, this is post-pandemic, most people are not playing 40K. Mm. They're playing Sigmar. They're playing a bunch of different games, and I'm actually seeing a little bit of a comeback of War Machine. put up that
how
I'm not saying that people are buying War Machine. I'm saying that I see people playing War Machine.
That is wild. I don't even know how they're doing that.
Yeah, which I think is it was pretty interesting on that end. But yeah, it's totally on that level. And we were just talking about that yesterday about Warhammer Third Edition, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay Third Edition.
Yes.
That game is a very much a board game in so many aspects of it. Did we talk about the rarity of the Fantasy Flight stuff last time? I don't remember.
No, we didn't. I want to hit up something real quick, because there was something I wanted to talk about that
go ahead.
the quick and dirty. There's a Magic the Gathering shenanigans going on. There's a subset of cards in their upcoming series that are alternate artworks of 63 of variants of like reprinted cards. So like old cards, like Demonic Tutor, I'm sure you remember from like fucking original series, Path of Exile, so on and so forth, et cetera. So it's an alternate art series. Well, one of those arts, it's hilarious when you look at the actual art, like it's so shitty. Like I was like, holy shit, I can't believe how bad it looks. But anyway, the artist is Jason Felix, who's a veteran artist, and I've seen some of his other work, and like his work's definitely better than what I see here. But it is he used stolen artwork to make this. He took a fan art from DeviantArt, no less.
Ooh, that's even worse.
The art's really good. The DeviantArt art is good.
But still.
But yeah, he stole fan art from DeviantArt and took a Nicol Bolas, who's one of the Dragon Planeswalkers, and literally just copy pasted it onto his piece, tilted it at a weird angle, so it looks very bizarre on the card, because it's a because the dragon was drawn standing, like Nicol Bolas in the original artwork was drawn, the stolen artwork was drawn standing vertically, like straight up, and he tilted the art so it's like a weird angle, but like the anatomy of the dragon is still clearly as if it was standing straight up, but he's at like a kind of like diagonal line angle, and he washed it out so it looked less recognizable, like it looked more like mushy. And I also think he stole the art for the other dragon on it as well.
That most rich artists, famous artists, whatever, steal art all the time. It's I shouldn't say well, artists, most comic book artists.
We have to talk. I mean, there's a thing we have to talk about, which is something that definitely matters, is references. Artists use references all the time. That is a tried and true method. That's how the classical artists, the best artists you've ever heard of, they've all done that. Referencing is a different story. This is literally, he took the artwork, literally used Photoshop to remove the dragon from the original piece of artwork, tilted it, stuck it on his copy paste card, did a photo filter to make it look like he drew it himself, and sent it off to Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, and also on top of that, this is like a master's series. Like, this is good art. This is supposed to be like professional art on there.
Yes. This is so supposed to be really... like the high end. This is supposed to be like all of them should be high concept. That's what they are.
So, like, you should be that's one of those things that you need to take your time on. Like, you're not going to copy paste.
Yeah. And he straight up just fucking copy pasted it. So like that was like the big thing. So like, he's been blown out. Wizards is like where, you know, they severed all ties with him. There was promotional material. There was like some supply items that were made with that artwork that are now not coming out. They pulled everything from the dude. And then to make this, to really add the cherry on top of this whole story is the artist that he's, so Jason Felix has done magic cards for years. I would consider him a veteran magic artist. So like, this is kind of like this is a blow to people who are fans of artists for magic. I don't give a shit. I just care what the card does. But this is the thing. However, to really add the cherry to this, the artist he stole from actually has submitted many times to Wizards of the Coast and been declined to get magic cards.
Yeah, that doesn't.
So man, imagine the daggers of being an artist who has submitted work to Wizards of the Coast many times and never gotten through and been able to do a magic card, to have someone who's done magic cards for years steal one of your pieces of art and use it for a magic card. Whew, boy, that's brutal.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me in the least, in all honesty. You know, because sometimes it's just a name, and a lot of, and if you think it's just that one thing, you're wrong, because I guarantee you art is stolen all the time, especially from DeviantArt. And God knows I love my specific fetish art that's available.
But this specific situation is why I don't think it actually happens that much. Not anymore, because so many people are out there, pimping their art and like are active. And if they're in a community, like obviously this person is in the magic community because they're drawing magic fucking fan art. So like, there's no way that this person wasn't going to notice that was their Nicol Bolas. Like, there's no way they're going to see all the cards in the new set. They're going to be looking at their cards and be like, "Hey, I drew that." So. Yeah, so I don't think there is actually that much stolen art in professional capacity. I see lots and lots of people stealing art for what is it, quasi-professional, which is this is the classic, like an influencer steals your piece of art to put on a like Spreadshirt t-shirt, because there's very little you can do about that. Like that's something that is that I think what your statement was, where they're stolen all the time, I 100% agree with that. That's where I think it happens. It happens in that, like, in that nebulous zone. Yeah. I think professionally it doesn't happen very often, because I think professionally it gets caught just like now every time.
Except if you're in the comic book world, because then it gets caught and people go like, this person stole this art, and people just go, it happens.
Yeah, I cannot speak to that, because I am not big on the comic world.
Rob Liefeld did it all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the 90s, the Wild West of comics.
This was like last year.
Wait, he still makes comics?
He does. He makes a lot of money doing comics. You know, Rob Liefeld ended up getting I think he was an executive producer on Deadpool.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think he actually created Deadpool, but I think he created like the Deadpool that everybody, and he did a lot of the Deadpool stuff that everybody.
So like the long and short is Deadpool as he exists now.
You okay there? We lost you.
Oh no. Hold on.
What were you saying about?
Hang on. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I hit my mic button, so fucking Google popped up to ask me questions.
You got really you got really too emotional about it. Too emotional about Rob Liefeld.
I was saying that Deadpool as he exists now is a collaborative effort. He's because Rob Liefeld, as far as I know, did the visual designs for Deadpool and like came up with the character. But when Deadpool was created, he was a very generic, like, I'm an assassin dude with a bunch of belt pouches and I'm really cool.
100%, yeah.
And then the Deadpool breaking the fourth wall, being a zany chimichanga character, that came from a lady writer, I think. I don't remember what her name is.
Yeah.
But like, so like the character design is all 90s Liefeld, just 90s. Like Liefeld is the epitome of the 90s design. Cause I mean, everyone was doing characters like Liefeld.
Well,
like,
Deadpool came out and I want to say 91. So he came out at the same time as the Soviet Lord of the Rings.
Yes. And he's a parody of, Slade Wilson, obviously, cause his name is fucking Wade Wilson. Deathstroke is the parody, is the character he's parodying. Yeah.
Deathstroke actually just got called out for having sex with a 14-year-old, but that's a different story altogether.
Wait, what? Deathstroke?
Yeah. When Deathstroke was first introduced in the Judas Contract in, Teen Titans, he was like brainwashing, or I shouldn't say brainwashing, but he was grooming Terra to take over the
Okay, you meant in the comic. God damn. I'm like, I was so confused. I was like, wait, like the actor? Deathstroke's been in the movie? The voice actor?
Deathstroke was just in the Justice League. Dungeons and Dragons fanatic personality.
Nice, nice. I actually heard the Snyder Cut was pretty good. I haven't seen it.
The Snyder Cut is great if you love slow motion.
Okay. Well, I mean, a lot of people do.
So much fucking slow motion. It's not
300 made a lot of money. So I'm going to tell you, people like slow motion.
The Zack Snyder Cut was, there was a very good movie in there. It was surrounded by a lot of hot chaff.
Okay.
Hot chaff. Just surrounded.
I mean, that's a much better review than the original Justice League cut, though. Like,
yeah, I mean, it was much better than the original Justice League. I'll give you that. The story made a whole hell of a lot more sense.
Okay,
and even that was like,
I mean, you know what? It's so impressive to me that like that happened, like that movie happened, like the Snyder Cut happened. Like that is like an incredibly impressive thing to me that it like occurred, that they actually released it. Like the fact that it like exists is really cool. And like they actually went back and kind of like tried to fix a movie that they fucked up. And but more like I said, I hadn't seen it, but it did seem like people were very pleased with with the change, which is nice. Cause I mean, I kind of like most of the casting choices of the DC characters. I think that like, I think Ben Affleck is a dope Batman. I think he's really good. Cause they're trying to go for like the more like quasi burnt out Dark Knight Batman, where he's kind of older. And like, I think Ben Affleck was fucking perfect as that Batman.
The movie, there's a lot of hot chaff in this movie, and this is not an endorsement in the least. It is a long fucking movie, and it has no right to be as long as it is.
That's movies, man. All movies are too long, except for Lord of the Rings, which should be longer.
And that movie is as watchable as it is, which is not that watchable, despite everything that Snyder does to impede that movie. Everything that's wrong with that movie is a total Zack Snyder choice. And they are bad, bad choices. There is so much fucking slow motion and like bad soundtrack, bad slow motion.
I said it's 300, man. People love 300 or they
enjoyable for the mass body mass alone, you know?
Well, like, I meant the like the slow motion and the music and stuff, because that's definitely a Snyder feature.
300 did that because it was trying to be a very, very specific comic, and Frank Miller has a very, very specific style that works for. This is not that movie. But that's besides the point. It makes me mad because so many people love Zack Snyder, and I'm like, oh, he's just a fucking right wing.
I mean,
pig.
People also really like Joel Schumacher, so
I like Joel Schumacher.
See, there you go. That's what I like. There's a reason. There's a lot of different kinds of directors out there because people like a lot of different kinds of things.
I like Joel Schumacher because he showed full vagina on screen. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, I like Lars von Trier, but he's not exactly someone I would consider a household name.
No. Joel Schumacher also did Batman. He put nipples on the bat suit. God bless him.
The bat card, the bat credit card.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like most of Joel Schumacher's movies, so I'm not going to say anything bad about him. Wait, he did do Showgirls, didn't he?
What, Showgirls Schumacher? I don't know.
I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see Showgirls on there. Maybe I'm wrong on this.
I know the director of Showgirls was someone famous. So
yeah. Oh no, that was Paul Verhoeven. God damn it! I love Paul Verhoeven too.
Yes, yes.
He showed full vagina on screen. God bless him. So there you go. I was, but I do like Joel Schumacher too because I think he's very campy and fun. And I think Phone Booth is a very underrated movie from 2002.
Is that the one where Colin Farrell is stuck in the phone booth and there's a sniper who won't let him out?
Yes.
Yes, I remember liking that movie, but I couldn't remember anything about it. I was just like, I remember seeing that movie. I liked it, but I don't remember what happened.
The problem was that in 2002, we were done with Colin Farrell. Like, he dropped and he became really famous in 2000 or 2001. And then in 2002, he was in four different movies that came out at the same time. Like, oh, he was in Hearts War, Minority Report, and Phone Booth all the same time. Oh, and American Outlaws.
Yes.
And so all of that came out at the same time. And we're like, we're fucking done with Colin Farrell. So by the time that in 2003, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies come out. Like, he was just in a fuck ton of shit. And we were all just tired of Colin Farrell at that point.
And then he was in Daredevil.
Yeah. He was 2003.
He was the worst part of Daredevil.
Exactly. And I'm very surprised it never got to Bullseye in the Netflix version of Daredevil.
The Netflix version was supposed to be a slow burn and it just kind of petered out because Disney Plus.
Well, it also petered out because all of those Marvel shows the problem was they came out and it was at a time when everyone was like, yeah, dark heroes. And then by the time that Marvel and the MCU came along and everyone was all joking around and jerking each other off, we're like, we kind of want that instead of dark heroes. Like, why is everyone going to be so sad?
I did. I'm not going to lie. I am a Willem Dafoe simp, and I really liked his Kingpin. I thought his Kingpin was awesome.
You mean
awesome.
Vincent D'Onofrio?
Vincent D'Onofrio. What did I say? Willem Dafoe? I mean, I'm also a Willem Dafoe simp, I guess. I'm a Willem Dafoe and a Vincent D'Onofrio simp. I'm something of a simp myself.
You're something of a simp yourself. God damn it. I was giving you the time to get your thought out before I got joking.
Something of a simp myself.
See, I'm not you. I don't interrupt the person to give the joke ahead of the time.
I gotta. It's gotta come out. It's gotta come out. I gotta steal the glory. I need the glory for myself. I need the extra glory because at the end of the tournament I have to win.
You have to have all the glory.
Even
if you drew on this podcast, you still have to have the glory at the end.
That's right. I have to have the glory at the end. That's good. All right. It's time for me to
end up here. Go to Game Classy Facebook page for all your Game Classy memery. It's the best way you could get out and get in contact with either Steve or myself. You can comment, subscribe on iTunes. You can also comment, subscribe on the UbTubs. It's a good way of helping out the podcast. If you'd like to get in contact with me, you could follow me on the Instagram. I am Game Classy Joe. I have a lot of pictures of painted minis. Only one has a fingerprint. It was posted in the last 2 weeks. Let's see if you could find him.
It's like a Where's Waldo.
Actually, then I say that and then people will just be five or six people, when I mean up people, will email me there's a fingerprint here, there's a fingerprint here, there's a fingerprint here.
you're just gonna have a huge array of models that have fingerprints identified on them.
I'm like, maybe I should wear latex gloves.
I don't think it's the wearing of the gloves that you have a particular grief with. It's the pictures, right?
I have an issue with both because it's what are you doing with the gloves? What are you trying to prove? You know, right, as I say, like, people could do whatever they want in their spare time, but they've opened up Pandora's box by showing that one picture of them wearing the gloves, which makes you question all of their decisions.
I see.
So you can follow me. Yeah, Game Classy Joe. You can't follow Steve anywhere because he is currently in hiding because he has used his free speech to call the president a bag of dicks way too many times.
You can actually follow me at the VTuber Simping and Fallout New Vegas meme zone. That's the Facebook page. I share two memes a day. I share a VTuber meme and a Fallout New Vegas meme on the daily. Please follow and enjoy my shit posts that I shamelessly steal from Reddit, Twitter, and Tumblr.
There you go.
Yes, it is the VTuber Simping and Fallout New Vegas meme zone. Please enjoy. I just shared a pretty good Prince Philip Ghoul meme.
I was actually just looking at the meme page and something popped up where someone is selling a Balin's tomb display from the original Lord of the Rings release for £30. That's a steal.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
I'm sure it's probably bootlegged.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure there's someone in China who's made copies of that and tried to get through on the Evergreen shipment and they've been delayed.
It's all over.
So, Steve, until next time.
Stan Polka, please.
Stan Prince Philip's corpse.
Yes, do that.
All right, later.
Bye.
Game Classy.